Welcome to Generation Now, the show by and for millennials and Gen Z. I am your host, Troy McDonald. Millions of retail investors and others took up the charge, downloaded Robinhood and other trading apps, and ran up the stock price of GameStop and AMC, two fledgling companies before this, or barely surviving companies. And all of this was gathered on places like Reddit. At its highs, GameStop stock, which usually trades at $25, $50 per share, was going for as high as $400 per share. Many held out, believing that this was their moment in the sun, except the sun set rather quickly. Share prices tumbled and left many who held on in the lurch. My guest today is here to shed light on what happened, his thoughts, and provide insights on kind of where we move forward from here. He is one of Kenosha's premier financial experts. He is the owner, CEO, founder, and money manager of RWH Asset Management and can be heard weekdays on WGTD's Market Minute. Please welcome Bob Haggerty to the show. Bob.
Hey, Troy. Thanks so much for having me. I'm honored because unfortunately, I'm not even close to being a millennial.
Well, no. And see, that's what I want. I wanted your perspective because a lot of people feel like, well, we did what we had to do, right? This generation, millennials and Gen Z, we did what we had to do. We stuck it to the big guy, but many people lost so much money. And there was a suicide, you told me about, 23-year-old individual who took his life.
He got a margin call for $723,000, I believe.
Which is
23 years old.
Which, if you could explain what that is for people who might not know what that is.
Sure. What wound up happening is that there were a number of people that bought large amounts of stock on margin. And the more gains that you have on margin, the more they let you borrow. What wound up happening for this young man is that he was a millionaire in GameStop. So he went from a thousandaire to a millionaire. And literally overnight, those millions of dollars came crashing down. So let me give you a perspective of where, and it happened to more than just GameStop, but we can talk about GameStop. GameStop went all the way up to $350 a share. Just weeks before, it had been $19.95 a share. And as quickly as it went up, it came down. By the way, if you're interested, it's trading at $44.80. In the industry, we call this a pump and dump. And it is something that if you've watched The Wolf of Wall Street, it is a 1980s version of a pump and dump. Today, it's on the internet. It's on Reddit. On this example, and it's still a pump and dump. They, meaning the original investors, were able to interest people by false information, by highlighting the good without putting the bad, and getting people to buy in non-suitable quantities a stock that pushed the price up. And as it went up, many of these, if not all of these, got out with unbelievable gains, only to leave those individuals like that 23-year-old holding the bag. And I mean, it's nauseating. It's sickening to think this 23-year-old took his own life because in the suicide note, it went into the burden that it would cause his family to try to repay and that $723,000 and that he didn't want to have that happen. So he took his life.
Just so, yeah. Unbelievable. And
you asked a question, what is a margin call? A margin call is when stocks fall enough. An individual stock, a grouping of stocks, it depends on how you have margined. Margined is borrowing when you don't have enough equity left under the law. And that's, to get real technical, that's called Reg T. The Federal Reserve and the Treasury run Reg T. It is a federal law. And once they have a margin call, you have until the next morning to wire money in to cover that amount of money. For him, he unbelievably would have had to come up with over $700,000.
Right, which he did not have. Like you said, he went from a thousandaire.
Yeah, right. I mean, he had a few thousand dollars that turned into millions. And as it went up, he just kept buying more stock and borrowing higher amounts.
Right. And creating the cycle. So let's talk let's take a step back, because I wanted to start with that story because a lot of young people listen, right? This is very real and has real life consequences, right? When you open up your Robinhood app or whatever app you're using and you see that you have to pay $713,000 or whatever by the next morning, that's a real life that was lost by this. So let's take a step back. You see this happening on Reddit. What are your initial thoughts? Could you smell the Wolf of Wall Street, like you said, the pump and dump coming?
Oh, yeah. I mean, for professionals, we've seen this before. It started out with we didn't have the internet back in the 80s. We had fax machines, and you'd have blast faxes going out to millions of fax numbers every morning. And people would see penny stocks, what we would call pink sheets, and they would try to push these things up. And as soon as they got a high price, they got out and they dumped everybody. And it's not unusual for this type of thing to have happened. And you know, you're looking at movies like The Wolf of Wall Street or Wall Street itself, that movie from the 1980s. It's not unusual for that to happen and for people to be taken advantage of.
Yeah, and I want to push back because that's one of the narratives you're hearing from a lot of young people. It's like, well, these institutional investors have done it. These hedge funders have done this. Why can't we use the same technique that has been done to strip employees of their wages and things of that nature? People are saying this is a rallying cry against the big guy.
Yeah. Well, there's two things going on. One would be an investor that can influence a stock price, okay? And what we're probably talking about is the Carl Icahns or Buffetts of this generation. Individuals that come in with billions of dollars and they can either short the stock. Carl Icahn likes to do that. Or he likes to go in and buy 10%. Once you have 10% of a company, it has to be defined. It has to be put into the Wall Street Journal for individuals to know that. And you have the right to start to nominate people to become on the board of directors. So you influence the company. You can influence the price of the stock. And that is an above the board tactic. Okay. You're not allowed to lie. You're not allowed to say X, Y, Z and have it not be true. If that's not true, or something that you're saying is inherently false, then the Security and Exchange Commission or FINRA comes in and they have fines in on the extreme side. They can have jail time for those individuals. I'm thinking of Martha Stewart for an example of insider trading. I've been thinking of Michael Milliken back in the 80s. That's who the movie Wall Street is all about, is Michael Milliken. Wolf of Wall Street is an example. He did some time. Now he's come out. He's an affiliate on television talks about that, but they've all been stripped. None of them can trade on a publicly traded company. None of them can be part of a board of directors. A good example is Martha Stewart. Martha Stewart has Martha Stewart Omni Living Center, right? She can't even be on the board of directors of her own company because she is a felon. And that felony has stripped her from being able to have that authority over her own company.
Right. And you're saying, so that's different. That kind of behavior is different than what some of the hedge funds were doing in this case,
This wasn't so much started by the hedge funds. If indeed it comes out that this is a backdoor entry from a group of hedge funds, there will be financial and legal ramifications. I'm absolutely positive. Let's talk about what a hedge fund is, though. Okay, Troy, you and I can't go into a hedge fund. Okay, you have to be, the term is an accredited investor. And that means we have to have an incredibly high net worth, as well as an amount of liquidity, as well as an amount of money that is incoming on a yearly basis to be able to have this accredited investment name that we are given. And that allows us to be able to go into a hedge fund. You and I, normal John Doe, we don't have the ability to do that. And the Security and Exchange Commission, as well as FINRA, says this is the reason. A hedge fund, by definition, has the right to take more risk than an individual that than a regular investment advisor or even a broker. Okay. And because of that, then you have to have more knowledge. The assumption is you have more knowledge if you have more money. Not necessarily true, mind you, but that is the assumption. And you can afford to lose more money and get out with something where you and I, a hedge fund, could put us into a position where we could never recover.
Right. And so you said something really interesting before we got rolling here. You said something about a heart surgeon, right? Right. That these are the equivalent of people who have the knowledge, right? The education to be able to kind of go through these things. Not always the case, though, from what you're saying now. Is that?
Well, I like to talk about, Reddit isn't the first one to do this, okay? It started out with E-Trade, and there was Ameritrade, and there was, there's been a million discount brokers out there. They don't give you help. You decide what to do. But as I was saying, do you do heart surgery on yourself too? I mean, that's what it comes down to is, do you want an expert? And everybody goes, well, is it worth it? Is it worth it to have a good doctor? If you're not making more money because you're with a professional, you should find a different professional. Just like if you go to a doctor that's not helping you, you should find a different doctor. Your investment professional should be beating, and this isn't a one-year thing. This is a long-term scenario, should be able to do better than you should be able to, should be able to pay for him or herself and have you come out better for it. If not, you're with the wrong person, you're with the wrong company.
Yeah, and that's important to say. So the retail investors who got in, there was I don't remember the name of the CEO, but he was on CNBC talking about, all these people with their stimulus checks, investing in Robinhood. So what would you say then to a young person who is wanting to get started, who might not have the knowledge or nowhere to go to find that professional, but they want in on the game?
Great.
What would you say to them?
And there's a great place for an entry-level investor. And that could be either in an ETF, which is called an exchange-traded fund. And that is a mutual fund, for lack of a better term, inside of a stock. So I can buy an index inside of a stock. It's going to diversify me. It's going to allow me to learn. And it's something that, hopefully long-term, if you pick the right index, you're going to make money in. So you can do an ETF in the S&P 500. You can do it in the Dow. You can do it in the NASDAQ. There are many different things that you can do. You can also look and say, I want to just buy a mutual fund. And why would you do that? Because you can use partial shares. That's the big thing about a mutual fund. Stocks, you have to round down. So not all your money would be used. With a mutual fund, you can get partial shares, which would allow all of the money that you want to invest to be able to be invested. And again, that would allow diversification and asset allocation and allow you then to be able to learn the market.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I'm a huge follower of Scott Galloway, who is a brilliant financial mind, constant CNBC contributor, has a show with Kara Swisher, Pivot, recommend that podcast. And he says, you know, from his research, 80% of day traders lose money.
Right. Well, that's why they that's why they live in their mother's basement. You know, I mean, I'll make the flippant comment. Because again, day trading isn't new. Day trading goes back to the 80s. As soon as it became cheap enough to be able to trade yourself, there has been day traders. And why would professionals be using other people's money if they could day trade successfully and just do it with their own? It's because day traders statistically, even professionals do not make money.
Right. And see, I'm someone who goes by the Buffett mantra, which he always says to buy and invest in stocks that you believe in, that you actually genuinely like.
And that you understand. Mm-hmm. His philosophy is don't invest in it if you can't or if you don't understand it.
Right. And that's key. You have to understand the business models of these companies. So let's talk about the CEO was on the hot seat of this company, Robinhood, on Capitol Hill this week.
As well as Reddit. CEO of Reddit will also wind up being called. Yes.
Right. And so a lot of this was on the subreddit of Wall Street Bets, where a lot of this activity was gathered. And I've been on the community. And in fact, I pulled a post up for this show. And someone bought a Mercedes with their GME money, GameStop money. So basically, this is not a cult, but it's like a lifestyle brand, right? Look what we can do when we organize together. You too can buy a Mercedes, almost Ponzi. Ask, where are the cheap soaps? I'm wondering that I'm going to be hawked. Right. I mean, this is very interesting. So just your thoughts on kind of the organizing of this. You said the process is not new. It was done on fax machines and E-Trade and other platforms. But what do you think about this current mutation of on Reddit?
I think that it's more dangerous because it can find more people. And that's what the pump and dump scheme is all about. Okay. The more people today everything is about the COVID vaccine and shots in arms, right? How many shots can you put in arms? If you're talking about this, it's how many people can get an email. So if I send it out to 1 million people, I'm going to get roughly 10,000 people that are going to answer it. That's statistics. If I send it out to 100 million people, well, now I've got a whole new ball game. And that's what they've been able to do with email. And that's why I think that Reddit may have some unique liability, because there isn't anything out there legally about this. And if there isn't liability today, there will be liability tomorrow as the Securities and Exchange Commission and FINRA catch up to the new technology. But I do believe that there will be people that will be fined, and there will be people that may wind up with jail time over this as time goes on. The one thing about the government is it's never quick. We're probably looking at a 3 to 5 year period, but we can go back. I mean, a lot of Troy, you're a young guy, but back in 2000 to 2002, you know, you've got Enron. And then you have the CEO of Enron, the night before his trial starts, he has a heart attack and dies in 2005. And we've got the CFO of Enron starting his jail term in 2006 or 2007. So it's going to be a while. The government takes a lot of time to get all the evidence that it wants, and then it comes in. But I think you're going to see some perp walks here. And It may be a year or two down the road, but somebody's going to wind up paying for it. And they're going to put a face to this 23-year-old that took his life and use him as an example of why a pump and dump scheme is horrendous, because it ruins people's lives.
I agree with that. But I want to talk about some of the CEOs themselves. You have Mark Cuban, you have Elon Musk, and others who are basically saying, hold the line, hold this stock while you know, people are getting crushed out there. Your thoughts on kind of these CEOs who are going out there telling people to continue this risky behavior?
Well, there are renegade CEOs, and you just brought up two of them, okay? Mark Cuban has been very outspoken. Elon Musk has gone way beyond that. He has been fined and censured by what he has said, and more likely more what he has tweeted that has affected stock price. And so he has, but when you're the richest man in the world or the second richest man now, does it really matter? And they come into the point, as the second richest man in the world, you strip that individual from being able to be in his own company, like they did a Martha Stewart. Probably not. That probably doesn't happen. So they have the money to be able to hold the line. They're billionaires. But the average person, no. And I'll tell you why they want them to hold the line is because, let's go back, that first question about a hedge fund. There were a number of hedge funds that did not like the company of GameStop. So if you don't like a company and you think the company is going to go down, you can sell that company short. What does that mean? It means you borrow the shares from someone else. You sell those shares immediately. And the money that you receive goes into a bank account. When you buy the stock back, you give the stock back to the person that you borrowed it from. If the stock went down, you keep the difference. If the stock went up, you have to pay the difference. So what happened here is there were a bunch of hedge funds that thought the stock either will or should go down. They had sold it short. And there were a huge number of short sellers out there. And they were put into what they call a short squeeze. So remember we said that if you lose money, you get a margin call? Well, that happens if you lose too much money on a short squeeze. So people either A, had to come up with money, or B, they had to close out the position. When they do that on a short, and I know I'm getting technical here, because you borrowed these shares, you have to buy them. And since you're buying these shares to be able to return them, what winds up happening is you push the price up even further. That is called a short squeeze. And that's how we got the $350 a share. Mark Cuban, and there's a number of CEOs out there. These are brilliant, brilliant men. They understand the market to the utmost degree. And they liked people that they particularly personally don't like, really taking it on the chin because of that short squeeze. It was a personal thing for a number of these individuals.
Right. And some of these funds who made those bets that the stock would not perform lost billions of dollars. These hedge
billions
funds.
And billions and billions of dollars.
Right. And you had people.
And went out of business, by the way.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. There was one that you're right that did go out of business. And so these people who held the line, and there are people even after the $300 were starting to come down, were telling people to still hold the line. And so those people were utterly, utterly crushed. So what do you make of Robinhood, the performance of the CEO, the fact that you have a whole bunch of young people out there on these apps, and these apps are gamified, right? You see, I have Robinhood, there's confetti, you know, it's like going to Vegas on your phone. What are your thoughts?
You save the airfare and the hangover. Okay. No, I think that there's a place for it. I think that there's a place for people that want to take care of their own investments. I don't like it. I think, as I said, you might as well do surgery on yourself. But I think that there are some people that that's what they want. So they should have the ability to be able to do that. But I do believe that there needs to be safety limits in place. That is that way, in my mind, is the only way to stop bad things from happening. We have the obligation to protect people from themselves in a worst case scenario. And, you know, the problem is, Troy, we haven't figured that out yet. Whether it's Ameritrade or E-Trade or Charles Schwab or any of those firms, that these are the old do-it-yourself firms back from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. And today it's Reddit as far as the chat room, or it's Robinhood as far as a trading platform. In those ways, it hasn't changed. All it means and all it does is it gives another opportunity for us to be able to look and say, you can do this, but we're going to put limits on how much you can lose. And at that point, then the government is going to do what is best for you. And I know that there are people out there, they're screaming at their computers or their phones or their radios or however they're listening right now, because the government doesn't have a right to do that. If the government doesn't have a right to protect you, then you don't have a right to sue someone when you lose everything. You know, it's plain and simple. You can't have it both ways.
Right. And I think that's a fair point. We have a few minutes left on the program, and I wanted to talk about kind of the regulation point, which you're getting at. Right now, it's self-regulated, right? The SEC and FINRA, you know, basically govern themselves.
FINRA is a self-governing agency.
Right.
When the SEC or the Securities and Exchange Commission gets in, that means it's really bad. That means that they are now going to recommend to Congress that we pass particular laws that will influence, or in a worst case scenario, restrict or repeal FINRA.
I want to kind of transition here, because I think the crux of the pain that a lot of young people are feeling and why they're, and again, and we should note this too, not everyone on the internet is who they say they are. I think we're going to find out in years to come that a lot of these people could have been from hedge funds who had different positions, and other nefarious actors who had different motives in mind. But if we go with the countervailing narrative, which I still think rings true, that there are a lot of young people who are pissed off and upset, rising income inequality, shepherded by a lot of these companies, right, who don't necessarily always pay a fair living wage for decent work. Studies show that millennials and Gen Z, as they reach 30, are doing worse off than their parents at 30 for the first time in American history.
Right.
So how do we channel this anger?
Well, you can get into the business. You can get licensed. You can become part of the change on a positive note, and be able to, if you're good at what you do, be able to make the income that you want to do while you make that change. That, you know, I'm a believer of changing from the inside, and you realizing that when you do that, it's slow. You're not going to have violent change, but it's change that you can take a look at, and that you can, you make sure that you don't have unintended consequences as you go through the process. You know, there is as much risk as you want to take in the market. There's somebody there that's willing to sell it to you. The question is how much money are you willing to lose?
I think that's the perfect way to end, Bob. I really think that's the perfect way to end. Thank you so much for doing this and informing our audience.
I appreciate the time, and questions. I'm on Monday through Friday at about 12:15. Listen in, learn. There's a lot of people that love learning about stocks, bonds, mutual funds, different ways to invest. It's out there for you if you want to learn about it. There's millions of books that are legitimate, good books that give you the wherewithal to be able to make decisions or to be able to know if your financial professional is making prudent decisions. So that's it. Do your homework. And Troy, as always, I appreciate the time.
Bob Haggerty is the CEO, founder, and money manager of RWH Asset Management of Kenosha. Until next time, bye, everybody.